before we get started this morning, many of you have picked up the reading schedule for the rhythm of the story, Genesis all the way through to the end of Revelation. Some of you have been emailing, texting, kind of panic like today, like, when are we allowed to do the scriptures? When do you want us to do this? And I'll say it this way, if you need to read before Sunday morning, feel free. If you want to kind of read it and see it Sunday morning through the lens of what we've read, that's great. If you want to wait till after Sunday morning to read it, that's great. I was talking with O'Haley last night. Their kids were asking to read the scriptures, but she said, no, Jill said, we have to wait. So don't, if your kids want to read the Bible, don't deny them that. That is never a bad thing to engage with them. In that space of Bible reading, I want to show this graphic. This highlights how irregular people who claim to follow the Lord actually engage the scriptures. So we would be in yellow. We would read the Bible 8% at least weekly, 6% daily. The whole hope is that as we work through this graphic becomes true. That as we love the Lord, that we value the words of God, and we engage the so that our lives might be shaped by the power of the Lord. While we are reading the scriptures, we are learning some memory verses. How many of you find it hard to memorize the Bible verses? All right, we're going to read it together. It's quite simple. This next slide up, I want to repeat that from you. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So again, in the beginning, God created heavens and the earth. So everybody close your eyes for a moment so you can't cheat. You're going to go to your cheat. First, I'm going to say the whole thing and then you're going to say it back to me. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now on your own, I'm going to count to three and you're going to do the whole thing yourself. One, two, three. And you're like, well, that's an easy thing. All of them are easy to do it myself. Particularly Jesus wept. Like that is, you should get that one. But two verses that you know already. But your kids downstairs are going to be learning verses. It's the same verse. So you get in your van, if you have a van, and you can talk about the verse that you've learned. Memorize it with your kids for the week. They are all profoundly life-changing verses that shape our world. Memorizing scripture, if you can memorize random sports statistics of your favorite player from their college days, you can do this. You can do this. So learn how to do this, teach you a little bit in fun ways to draw us and memorize the scripture. So with that being said, let's just begin with a word of prayer. Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you so very much for today. We thank you for your story that we will be working through cover to cover today. Thank you for how we don't read it alone, that the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, is there whispering to us, prompting things into our hearts and minds, that these things affect us alive and well and active. God, pray that it can be a profitable experience for all of us, whether we know you deeply and according to you, or whether we are still kind of unsure of who this guy Jesus is and what he's done for me, and I'm not sure if I want to follow him yet, but regardless of the place that we're in, that our lives will be shaped by we all love a good story. For those of you that are readers, you will recognize these classics, Huckleberry Finn, Moby Dick, Pride and Prejudice, Jane Eyre, Paradise Lost. These are classic stories that if you have graduated from the public school system, you have read at least one, if not three to five of those classic stories. And if you haven't read them, you are a boring human. Like, you should read some of the classic books that have shaped your culture in all kinds of ways. And if the adult classic books are not your style, maybe some of these ones will be your style. The Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, Charlotte's Web, Pippi Longstocking, Winnie the Pooh, Curious George, Where the Wild Things Are. Those are the top seven children's classics. I love the second list that I read to you, because they tend to be 5 and 6 cent words. That I didn't know. As a boy, my father was a great storyteller, and he told stories using made-up squirrels named Christine Spartan. He would tell these stories to communicate lessons to our wives, and we would always lean in and listen close to these stories. And my dad tells the stories. Even now, my kids lean into these stories. And this is how slow I am. It wasn't until I was 35 that I realized that the story was actually being told to leverage something that he, as a dad, was trying to teach his son about behavior in the home. So my brother was 50, I was Sparky, they would fight, he would say, this is how it gets resolved, do you get it? He'd be like, blink, blink, like, but we love stories. We love stories. And we can identify with stories, we can entertain the stories. And we love stories so much that even when we were little, we all had a great classic story of what our life would become. I remember as a young boy, I suspect many of you, this is true of you. When I grew up, I want to be a policeman, a fireman, a teacher, a nurse, a doctor, a lawyer, whatever it is. You had a very clear picture of what you wanted your life to be and to do. It had purpose and victory. It had a happily ever after towards the tail end of your story, where we would say, I want to be married, and you'd say, I want to marry that girl who normally was your neighbor, or that boy who was your neighbor, and a boy who's like, I want to marry anybody, like in the 7 a.m. kind of weirdness, because they don't really understand what's going to happen when they're 13. But there was kind of this, I want to get married, I want to have a house, I want to travel, I want to have kids, I want to have a picket fence and a golden retriever, and I want to be happily ever after when I'm all over. Now that we have grown up, for the most part, for many of us, our lives are anything but our story. For the vast majority of our culture and world, our stories lack purpose, they lack a sense of victory. For many of us, we have already given up on happily ever after. For some, it is hard to even remember how the story begins. We try hard to walk out certain aspects and chapters of our story and we think that it is something that we want. For many of you, you're in the middle of your story and it's frustrating. You don't like how the narrative is going. And you try to restart, and you try to restart, and you try to restart, and on it goes. And then for many, they just can't wait for the end of the story. But for some, they hurry up and bring you to the end of the story. It's hard to want to tell you that. I am telling you, this is 1483. C.S. Lewis, he said it this way, you can't go back and change the beginning of the story. But you make sure you can start where you are from this. And you can change the end. The rest of your life, regardless of how old or young you are, it can be filled with purpose. It can be filled with joy and rest and hope and contentment. It can be filled with all of these things that when we were little, that we hoped that our life would change with the best of us. But the only way that that story of our lives can happen and go unfold is for us to come to a place where we would, for the first time, or maybe even 100th time, recognize that there is a greater story other than our own personal story unfolding in the world around us. This is God's story. When we allow our lives to get caught up in this story, our stories become truly amazing. Our stories become filled with significance, purpose, and identity, and all kinds of things that the human heart is after anyway, and it's only found there that we look for in all kinds of other spaces. Over the next 31 weeks, we'll be discussing this kind of grand story, the upper story of God's life and work, which he began and continues to do now. And we'll be highlighting a whole lot of kind of lower story. What I mean by lower story is a lot of characters in the scriptures that you either know or that you're introduced to for the first time. Men and women like Ruth and David, Solomon, and Naomi, and a whole bunch of people that we get a glimpse of their lower stories, and we realize, like, I'm just like them. Their story reflects just like my story. Like, I can identify with them. I can identify with David. I can identify with whoever the character is. And their stories only become amazing. In fact, the only reason why we know of those men and women is because they allowed their lower story to get caught up in the upper story of God's human history. So that said, let's begin the upper story of God, and it begins like this. Better yet, in the beginning, heaven. Anyway, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. God's creation is beautiful. His intentions for us were amazing. Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 reveal all the details, where on day 1 he creates the light and separates the light from darkness. On day 2, he creates the sky. On day 3, he creates the dry ground and the sea. He causes all the vegetation to come forth. On day 4, he creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. Day 5, he creates all the fish in the sea and the birds of the sky. On day 6, he creates every living creature that roams on the ground, culminating with the human being, the gemstone of his creation. Adam is the first man. He is placed in the Garden of Eden. He is alone, and God recognizes that this is a problem. So Adam falls asleep, and from the rib, he creates Eve, and when Adam sees, he is impressed. Because this is someone that now he can do life with together forever in heaven. As we read from Genesis 1 and 2, we get a sense of God's good and perfect design for his creation, particularly us as human beings. There are specific things that God tells them to do. There are specific things that God makes available to them. They are to be good and wise rulers over the creation. They are to name and care for everything that God has made. They are to eat of all of the plants that are being made in the garden except the one. They are to have sex and make children. It's right there in the creation story. It's amazing that I did not discover that until I was following you. In the middle of the garden, there are two trees. There is a tree of life that had a beast to be able to reach everyone. There is a tree of the knowledge of the tree. I told them that they would die. And all that God had hoped for them, all that he had intended for them, would be beautiful and spectacular, and if they ate from it, they would suffer and die. These are the specific things regarding God's design for humans. As you read this story, you need to get this. If you don't grasp this in the inside, the whole story will be buried in the garden as it is, dependent on God's design. They listen to his words of instruction, they obey, they practice all of God's words, and they are amazing. This is where humanity flourished in every aspect of the world. He gave them purpose, he gave them their identity, he gave them all kinds of things that they would practice and do for their great joy in life. He was the one who held their keys to life, they understood that, and they did it. Early on, Adam and Eve, in this life-giving relationship with God that he has designed for all of us to be in, this is a wonderful human being to truly flourish at this point. You are. In order for your story to matter, in order for my story to matter, in order for these stories to be filled with wonder and amazement and purpose, we must understand that our life flourishes when we walk in relationship with our Creator, the living God. After the upper story of God ends in Genesis chapter 2, there is another story that enters. This is where the lower story begins. A story that would forever ruin Adam and Eve, and not just ruin them, but for all of us who would follow. At the beginning of life, it was easy for them to know God and walk in his design, but before long, we read of some significant change in this relationship. God had instructed them not to eat from this particular tree. If they ate of this tree, they would die. As the story unfolds, they did eat the tree because they thought they knew better than God himself. They did eat from the tree. And everything that God created for us to experience and live in for us was fractured and ruined. Christians call this moment the fall. It's a significant doctrine to who we are as individuals. If you understand this is the reality that shapes every single person. Life in this world. When God used the term death to describe the consequences of their disobedience, he meant it in every possible way, even though Adam and Eve had no idea what he meant by the term death. After they ate from this particular tree of knowledge of good and evil, all creation was subject to death. A curse is another word that the Bible uses to describe what has happened to the world. We see the curse on the land every single day. We see it several weeks ago in Hurricane Harvey as it wipes out. We see it last weekend with Hurricane Irma as it moves into Florida and all the Caribbean. We see it in Mexico where there's an earthquake of 8.2 on a Richter scale. We see it in us. But right away, we begin to see Adam and Eve. They get uncomfortable in their own skin. They carry shame. They carry guilt and anxiety, fear, nervousness, and anger, which is still true as human beings today. I have three girls. Curious. The world in which my girls grew up in. They're constantly being reminded of the world. And my girls. Grade 4, grade 3, grade 1. Lauren is aware that she has freckles and she's peaceful and she's uncomfortable with her. Jacqueline, who's full of snowshoes in February, is aware that she's not that. Like, uncomfortable in her own skin. The curse is a voice in the skin of our own time, so we don't recognize it. We don't call it by what it is. We see it in the story between Adam and Eve. The first fight is between Adam and Eve, which would be the first of millions of fights between husbands and wives. And it's over the same kind of thing. Who's responsible for the mess that we're in? Who's responsible for getting lost on the highway? Who's responsible for the situation that we now find ourselves in? We see the curse at play between the heart between Cain and Abel, where Cain kills his brother Abel. And this trend of argument and strife and war and fighting starts there and continues down through the ages. It carries all the way through to the end. Right up to the end. Hurricane Harvey was bad enough to be one of the last people to leave on this property. While the hurricane was unfolding, a lot of the business owners in Houston, they were gone. They were gone. That's the curse of what we're doing. But while someone trying to hide for their life, another thing, would go to their store and break it in fear and listen to jail and rob them from their livelihood. And we don't have to go to the system. On our own, last week, our school board said that there's no place to go to the school board to get money back. It's amazing how many times we're not able to do it. So the picture of the school board. That is, watch it all through pictures all the time. It breaks your heart that we would think we're gaining something by glorifying something essential that our kids are watching us do. And we have no grounds to say to them when they're 9, 10, 12, 15, you're lying. Well, so are you. So are you. Make no mistake. Our lives as human beings is marked by the curse of everyone fighting, bullying, cheating, stealing, racism, and so on. I need you to hear this when I say this out loud. When Adam and Eve choose to eat from this particular tree, something changes in God's good creation that he did not intend to happen. Sin and death enter the world, it enters the human heart, and it ruins everything. There's a verse in Genesis chapter 4 that reads like this. Sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. That was said to Cain before he killed his brother, and it's said to you. Sin is crouching at your door. Its desire is to win. But you must rule over it. The problem is we have no ability to rule over it. Whether you like it or not, sin is a condition that we have inherited, and it influences us every single day. To walk away from God's good design, this is what sin does. Sin is what causes us. It causes the husband to lust after a woman who's not his wife. It causes a woman to question her physical appearance on whether she is attractive or not. Sin is the uncontrollable rage that wells up in us when we are wronged or our kids are wronged, and instead of leaning into forgiveness, we seek revenge. This is the power, the curse that lurks in your heart. Sin is what causes us to lie and deceive, which we think will serve us and our family the best. Sin is what causes us to gossip and tear others apart behind their back. Sin is the condition that plagues us all. All of us. And we inherit this from our first parents, Adam and Eve, in the Bible. And when we consider what sin is and what it does, it should not surprise us that it ruins our life-giving relationship with God. This beautiful picture we see of Adam and Eve in the garden with God receiving life and instruction, it fades away very quickly from this evening. And we, like them, find ourselves separated from the one who gives life and the one who gives purpose. who gives meaning to our lives. The Saul that you should be reading in Genesis 1, 2, 3, that's outlined in the story, the pages of Genesis, it is so severe that shortly before the Cain and Abel event, he leaves this God described his own name. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become and every inclination of the thought of the human heart was only evil all the time. The Lord regretted what he had made. The child was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race that I've created with them in the most words. Anything that's bad in our world is connected to this and this alone. On a very personal level, in your life, the reason why our individual stories struggle, the reason why we even fail ourselves of what we thought our lives could and should be as we grow, it is because of the power of the curse that is alive and well in us. And as you have read, or you will read this week, as the upper story of God continues, God doesn't quite wipe out the human race and all the living things in the world. He does cause a flood to fall upon the earth like it's never been before that moment or since. Everything is buried, everything is destroyed except for one man and his family, and then he will. He was the only one that loved his creator. And through Noah, God was going to start again. Through Noah, God was going to save his creation. After the flood waters recede, the language that God gives to Noah is incredibly similar to that of Adam and Eve. In fact, it's the exact same language. Be fruitful and increase in number. Multiply and fill the earth with the world. And when you look at the flood account, I want you to look at it through kind of God in this moment is hitting the reset button. Growing up, I had a Nintendo. And the first few moments of your Nintendo game really was going to determine whether or not this was going to be a good game. And then those of you that are kind of gamers, you know what I'm talking about. Those first initial moves, did I get the Queen Man in that particular brick? Did I miss the little turtle thing that was kind of hitting me in Super Mario Brothers? And we knew that if we could get through the opening level 1-2, that this had the potential to be a good game. But if, for some reason, someone called your name and you were transitioned, and your man died, you would lean in and hit the reset button and start over. This isn't at all the same mind. He did not have a mind that the human heart would be ruled by the people who get in all the time. The difference is when Noah and the flood emerged from the flood, the effects of the fall are still in place in the mind. The statement where God says that every inclination of the heart is only evil all the time still rings true in the hands of the God of faith. Before we bring our time together to court, some of you may be restoring your own to be like, this does not sound like what I'm looking for. This does not sound like the guy that I want to become. There are right ways to be descriptive, and there are wrong ways to be descriptive. And as you read, I need you to read this. God is the one who has created all things for us to experience life. They decide that they want to do things on their own. They decide that they know best. And in this decision, it ruins everything. Ruins everything. And despite a continual unwillingness for us to lean into God's great design where we were supposed, despite this unruly heart that will forever run away from you, God comes running to us to save and redeem us. This is what's going on with you. Like, I'm just going to ask you, well, I'm just going to ask you. wonder what I would do if on my wedding day I stood at the altar of this moment. Someone said to me, by the way, your wife is going to be a faithful husband to you. And not just for me. My sweet. We got you. All the way. Reminds us with the first great picture of God's loving character. And we will see over and over and over again that He loves, He pursues, He forgives. He's a God of mercy and love. He longs for us to flourish and will go to whatever steps is necessary to ensure that that might happen. Starting with this one. If it's your desire to have a great story in life, our story will always struggle and always feel difficult. But when we come to recognize that our heart is a particular thing filled with sin, and we turn towards the one who does love and restore, remember, like the story did with Adam. Adam and Eve, like they royally sinned. They had one rule. I would love my home if I had one rule going on. I love my home anyway. I have lots of rules. But one rule, it's pretty hard, one rule. And God removed them from the garden and pursued them by after. This is the God who, after King kills his brother, ensures that no one will touch him. This is the God that redeems the world to the flood so that every generation that would follow might have a chance to flourish in life and living. This is the God who is in front of the world, Noah. God knew that Noah was not going to be saved. When we turn away from our lower story that is marked by sin and death, and turn to God's love, the God who pursues us and restores us, and we get involved in God's upper story, and we restore this place. And quite honestly, this is the only time where and they're all going to be happy for us. They're struggling in life. Several years ago, recognized her lower story and wanted to get in